This podcast is not meant to be informative or educational and has the potential to be completely irrelevant. This is Property Jam.
Hello.
And welcome to another episode of Property Jam, the podcast where we talk about everything on the human side of property. And in today's episode, we're going to do our best not to be informative and factual, but there's a hell of a lot of stuff going on out there right now in the property world, which we want to discuss. And I think it's important that you guys are aware of, because it's an ever-changing landscape right now as we're starting to steamroll into a general election towards the end of this year. We've got a Conservative Party clamouring for anything they can grab hold of to win votes. And there's a lot of electioneering policy making at the last minute to try and make things happen or make them look like they're happening so they can predict that they have made this impact. And so we're seeing changes, a lot of changes through the Renters Reform Bill, lots of changes to permitted development, to council tax, to what else we've got? Those are the main three that I can think of.
Yeah.
Licensing, HMO, serviced accommodation.
Service accommodation
is a big one. So there's so much going on out there right now that I think it's going to put, and well, I think there's a misconception that it's going to put a nail in the coffin for property investors.
There's always a misconception that it's going to do that every time they change stuff up.
Yeah, property is dead. Mm. It was never alive in the first place. But
resuscitated and now it's going back into its grave.
Yeah, exactly, which is obviously not the case.
No, not at all.
No. So what's your take on everything? Let's go to Niall.
I think it's very positive. The last thing we spoke about was the licensing for service accommodation. Yep. And I look at that in the same way as I do licensing for any other part of any other strategy, like HMOs as an example. It's a really good way to regulate the market, keep a track on what is actually being rented and how people are renting their properties on a short-term basis. And not screwing their customers over. So I think it's a good thing. Safer properties, control perhaps maybe on the amount that people can charge, number of properties that they can have in a specific area, and the quality of those properties. So I think it's a good thing. I'm all for it.
You know what? Just on that note, the service accommodation, the government made a rod for their own back. They caused the surge in short-term accommodation
by filling up all the hotels.
Number one. Yeah, no, actually, that's a very good point, actually. But no, because they changed tax relief. So what they did is they took away tax relief for mortgages on any property held in personal name. So every single landlord up until 6-7 years ago generally bought property in their own names because there was no reason not to. And then they took away the ability to offset it against your tax, apart from short-term lettings. So guess what happened? All these people that have got probably high rate taxpayers invested their money into properties, and they've got, I think the average investor had like 2, 3, 4 properties. So they've only got 2 or 3 properties, and now they're paying a hell of a lot more in tax on properties where they weren't before. So what are we going to do? You know what? I'll rent it out short term instead, and they're getting probably the same amount of income, if not maybe a little bit more, and they're claiming all of their mortgage interest against their taxes. So the government caused this situation, in my view, and as have quite a lot of well-known property educators out there through schemes like Rent to SA, because Rent to SA had tax benefits for the owner of the property, I believe, and it had then benefits for the person as a quick cash cow. And I think both of these strategies are going to not die, but they're going to be a hell of a lot more difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I just felt like there was just too much haziness around the accountability and the regulation, really, and the safety of those projects. It just
very
felt
easy to scam someone.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
That's what
very,
I mean.
Very
loopholes.
Easy to scam someone. Yeah.
A lot of loopholes. And it felt like it needed tightening up. So I'm not hating it, to be fair. I think it's still something it can be done. You just got to run it right. And I think the more regulation around it, the safer the inhabitants will be, certainly, but also the more protected you are as the landlords, because there's a group of you in that scenario. There's less of a blurred line between, you know, in the event that something goes wrong, where accountability lies, where, you know, a legislative finger could be pointed, you know, so there's more protection as opposed to, you know, oh, that's it, game over, you know, nah, run it right, you'd be all right.
And actually, if you think about the biggest problem we have in this country, which is lack of housing. What they're doing is they're saying, oh, we need 300,000 new homes every year. And you know what? Labour came out and said, we're going to build 1.5 million homes in the next 5 years.
Are you really?
Yeah, I was like, hang on a minute. So that's exactly the same as what every government has said for the last, 20 years? Labour, Conservative.
The Conservatives get rid of their housing targets because it was just getting absolutely ludicrous and they never stuck to it. They stopped, they just got rid of it.
Well, they took away the kind of the penalties for not hitting housing targets for local authorities. But yeah, just that whole idea of service accommodation taking up family housing, I think is there's two ways of doing this, because service accommodation is about to come like HMOs is. They're going to be, there's a new use class, there's permitted development to get there, and Article 4, which will stop you from doing it. It's exactly like HMOs.
Yeah.
We know what we're doing with HMOs, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of the service accommodation policies end up stealing the HMO policies.
Mm. Yeah.
It's going to be exactly the same. In fact, in a year's time, we're probably going to be teaching service accommodation because it's exactly the same course I'm teaching now for HMOs. You know, just a different tenant type and demand. So what you're doing is you're identifying where the need is and then providing service. But to be fair, with HMOs, you're still providing housing and you're actually taking a property and getting more people to rent it. So you're providing more beds in a property that didn't house that many people before. Whereas with service accommodation, you're taking that entire property out of the residential market.
Mm.
So it's becoming a second home for someone else temporarily. Mm. So it's not the first home, the primary residence. Mm. And so yeah, with HMOs, it does... Yeah, I do get my beer in my bonnet about people going, oh, it's, you know, it's we don't need these, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yes, of course we need these. These are actually the solution to the housing crisis. Whereas with service accommodation, it's causing the housing crisis. So we need it. The economy, local economies will need it to a certain degree. But then what I like about the changes is that you can monitor where it is. So local council, it's how much you believe local government is you know, well managed. And manage these things well or not, and how well you think. Look, I suppose you put a lot of faith in a lot of politicians to sort this stuff out and to create policy. But ultimately, if there are a set of rules which are sensible on where to put service accommodation units, or actually policy whereby they will encourage, it's like the student halls of residence, they will encourage a student halls of residence but discourage an HMO because the hall of residence gets all the people of that demographic in one place. So
they understand that.
Yes.
They don't understand HMOs.
They don't. Well, they also don't. I don't know. They feel like it's sort of there's no benefit to them. You know, it doesn't serve them in any way. And this is where I feel like, again, like service accommodation has become a gap filler. It's become this really, it's sort of, this sort of one fits all, because it's not just holiday lets, which is kind of what everyone thought it was initially, like Airbnb stuff. It's actually become like people, like you say, people's second residence. It's become used by councils for overflow housing, you know, it's like, and transitional workers, you know, it's become this whole spectrum of housing, and it's just, it's got to be tightened up so that, you know, it's not just, it's because it's like you say, it's somewhere between, if you've got a whole bunch of people who, you know, are working, you know, on a transitional contract, like sort of four months here, 2 months there, they're effectively in an HMO, but there's no HMO regulation. And it's like, well, you know, if something has to change, it just needs it. And so I think this is really, I'm welcoming these changes. And I, like you say, Matt, I actually think this will roll out into education funnels and will become a legitimate strategy for people that's, you know, a lot like HMOs.
Mm.
Yes, and understanding where to do it properly, where it's wanted and where it's needed, because there's talk about seaside towns and protect. I mean, seaside towns like to protect their short term accommodation anyway, because it's a big part of their economy. Mm-hmm. So it's just weighing that up. But that's service accommodation, obviously the big one, which is changing. You have to register it. You have to get planning for it now. But the legislation currently is not clear. It might have cleared up slightly by the time this is out, but right now it's not entirely clear what this new C5 use class will be.
C5.
Yeah.
I like C5.
But all I do know is that you won't be able to go from C4 to C5.
Oh, is that? I didn't know that.
So the PD right will only be between C3 to C5 and back. So
that makes sense.
Yeah. So an HMO.
Well, it doesn't. If they're going to be using the same standard basically for C4 and C5, then the interchange between C4 and C5 should be a lot clearer than C3 to C5.
Well,
you'll have all your fire regulations in place. You'll have all of that done. The house will be set up. Interesting.
I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how much we're diving into fire regulations and all of that with licensing, because I'm not, the details not out yet. But I think it's, at the moment it's more just a register of service accommodation. But there we are, baby's awake.
Yeah.
Hello. I was going. I almost said Freddie. Not Freddie is Matt's child. Sorry, Ellis.
Ellis and Freddie. They're going to be raving up in Bristol in 20 years, 10 years.
Living it up. You don't look very happy about that, Ellis. Continue.
So as we were saying, service accommodation, licensing.
C4,
C5, that was it, yeah. So you have to go back to C3 to go to C5. And like, what's the difference between C4 and C5, as you say, in terms of planning? Apart from it's just the tenure of operation. And so that, does that mean that C5, you can't have a 6-bedroom service accommodation?
Well, I guess maybe because as soon as, maybe they're concerned with mixing the two strategies. So in order for a C4 to become C3, it needs to be empty. And then it's automatic permitted development unless it's Article 4, right?
Exactly.
C3 to C4. Yeah. So as soon as it's empty, becomes C3 automatically, and then maybe you have to apply for C5 again.
Oh, so many Cs. It's too many Cs.
So many Cs, yeah.
Just, yeah. It sounds a bit faff, actually, because I've kind of on reflection listening to now. It's like, yeah, actually, it's going to be set up in a way that probably C5 is going to need if it's a C4 going to C5. So there is logic to allowing that under permitted development rights, but I don't know.
Yeah, so to be fair, to go from C4 to C5, you just empty it and start using it as C5.
Pretty much.
Article 4, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's. I wonder what the. I wonder if that will change actually over time. I think that's. Yeah.
Well, I don't know, but I don't think it will change in a hurry.
C4's going back to C3s is no small thing actually, because it's so you got.
That depends how much of how much you put into your C4 HMO. If you're doing like all suites and things like that, it's set up as an HMO. It's set up as short term accommodation. You can rent it by the room short term. So you go back to C3 by taking everybody out, and then you rent the entire property as one by the night. That would then be C. We're really speculating here. I was going to say, let's just wait until they put the legislation in, because they've announced they're doing it, but they haven't released the legislation yet at the time of recording.
Yeah, it's October this year, right? It's kind of.
Let's move on to something else. Let's talk about permitted development.
No fault evictions.
No, okay. Let's talk about no fault evictions. Go on then.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think
renters reform bill.
Renters reform bill. So this is. I was looking at some stats around this. Apparently, 14% of landlords surveyed, this was Good Lord did a survey, reject the changes. Sorry, I'm not happy. No, that's not right. Hang on. 14% of people are happy about the changes, which seems everybody else isn't. So, yeah. And I was thinking, okay, a lot of the voices out there on some of the blogs that I've read are around landlords feeling like they're going to be losing their right to evict tenants, which is already a laborious and drawn out process. And that once Section 21 is abolished, that to get anyone out is going to be near on impossible. But when you actually break it down and realize that they're effectively what they're doing is they're unpacking Section 8, is kind of what they're doing. I don't feel they're just being more specific.
It's a knee-jerk reaction to a change.
But also to a change that's kind of, for me, really clear. Like, it's that they've broken down all the different grounds on which you could evict somebody. And there's so many. Like, it's like, there's loads. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, it's not doom and gloom. So, yeah, I don't know. What are your thoughts?
I don't really see any major issues with getting rid of Section 21. Like I said, we've said before, the only time we ever evict tenants is if they're behind on the rent. Or they're causing antisocial behavior, which we can still evict them for. So Section 21, getting rid of it, will actually probably help tighten up the other laws and free up the courts for unnecessary evictions.
We would hope so. But I think that's one of the calls for is that if you're going to do this, you must be able to expedite the eviction, because there's a real reason for the eviction if it's happening. The whole purpose, the whole reason Section 21 is used is instead of Section 8. So you're using Section 21. I'm getting the wrong way around now. When Section 21 goes, you have to then prove that someone's been a pain, they haven't paid their rent. Whereas at the moment, you don't have to prove it. So, and the only reason people are evicting people is because they've broken the law, but Section 21 is easier.
Yeah.
That's the only reason why Section 21 is generally used. Yeah, we talk, you hear in the news about like revenge evictions, things like that. But I think that is the huge minority of cases.
1%
tops. Yeah, like huge, less than that. Yeah, if you think about the number of rental properties, it's a huge minority of cases. So I don't see a huge issue with it. I do see an issue with how it's worded with HMOs. So I'll be interested to see how it gets implemented with HMOs. And it's currently, I was looking at the other yesterday actually, about where it is. Yeah, it's currently still in the House of Commons and soon to be going to the House of Lords. So probably a couple of months away from it being gaining royal assent. But
how long have we been talking about, or how long has this been in the works?
I mean,
it's come to this point on several occasions and then suddenly pushed back again, shelved until the next time they need it.
It's never got this far before. No, it hasn't. So it's at the second stage. It's at the amendments, and it's having its third reading in the House of Commons shortly, which means that it's then to the House of Lords to see what they do to it. So there are a lot of amendments that have been made. Only one of which refers to HMOs. Renters Reform Bill. To be fair. It is what it is. National Register of Landlords might make HMO licensing redundant.
Yeah, true, actually. Yeah, lots of less faff. I tell you what, the whole pet thing, you know how I feel about that. I'm so pro pets being allowed in properties. I think, you know, that should be the default.
But not in HMOs.
But not in HMOs, absolutely not. And yeah, lizards, fine. You know I've had lizards in mine and parrots. I've had lizards and parrots.
That's just your tenants.
Parrots I probably wouldn't allow, because you can still be allergic my concern is the hygiene and the impact it has on everybody else in the house. It's like bringing in a bad tenant. A bad tenant can make everyone else move out. So you would never let a tenant
issue.
Move.
It's a space issue as well. It's everything. It's hygiene, it's space, it's
noise. Parrots can be noisy.
Yeah, noise. All of those things. But so I agree with you. In HMO, absolutely not. But in a family rental, absolutely.
Although we've just been reletting a basement flat that's below an HMO, and pets has been a consideration, because we've had quite a few applications with pets.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I think for when we've been looking at the applications, yes, we don't necessarily object to pets, but if somebody's moving in with a menagerie of pets, then it's going to cause an impact.
A zoo.
It's a one bedroom flat that's below ground level. So, you know, it's not really that well equipped for having a lot of pets.
I did, and we the last well not the previous one but the one before that had a dog, and we allowed them to have a dog, which was fine. There's a park just over the road, but yeah, like three cats, a budgerigar, and a
hamster,
and a hamster. I think is starting to take the mick.
Yeah,
when you've got, you know, so many other tenants around.
That's really funny.
Oh. You have to be cautious of the people living upstairs and the whole layout. There's not really an outside space that they can use where the pet can run about, and you know. There's a lot to take into account. It's not just to say yes, we allow pets across the board. It's property per property basis.
Yeah,
I think
it's definitely per property basis, but I do think that that whole blanket policy, you know, it's just, you know, it's got no pets. It's just.
I think what it is you must allow pets unless there's a reasonable reason why why a pet could not be allowed, and HMOs I think is a reasonable reason. But the other thing that is quite interesting is permitted development rights. This is something that Michael Gove's all on his high horse about at the moment, and spitting them out all over the place encourage.
This is how they're going to get their additional houses. What's 1.5 million? Is that what you said?
No, that's what Labour said they're going to do. But you know
Labour
what?
Said that. Okay.
The Conservatives said they're going to do that too. So what's the difference? But the PD rights were quite interesting. So they've changed some of the rights around office to residential conversions. So some of the larger offices, you only had the ability to do 1,500 square metres of space.
Yep.
So you've now got unlimited space that you can convert within a class E building.
Yep.
So the larger ones that, yeah, you know, to be fair, quite often some of them are unfit for purpose as offices anymore.
Yeah.
Can be converted all to residential.
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
So I think, again, it's like they always give with one hand and take away with the other. And like, you know, however the Renters Reform Act is going to be perceived, I always feel like permitted development rights counteract it, you know, because they do. It's something they unpack all the time and extend. And, you know, for something that was only ever going to be like a temporary initiative, it's become an essential to provide housing in this country.
Yeah, and it's the government trying to get the local authorities to just get developing, because the local authorities are stuck with planning. Yeah, the planning system is fundamentally broken.
It's so clogged. I mean, you know, it's they've got to lighten the load. It's crazy. Nothing's going to get through otherwise, you know.
Yeah, so it does help that. But the other very interesting one of what they're doing now, what they're proposing with householder permitted development rights, to make it even easier to extend properties by quite a large amount, which is really cool.
Oh, don't tell my dad. He was really annoyed when my neighbour proposed going back to basically fill the garden with a whole extension. And was claiming that it was allowed, which it wasn't. But yeah. Oh, all the NIMBYs, they're all going to get annoyed.
They're going to get annoyed anyway. It doesn't matter what is going on. They're going to be unhappy.
But it's
they can, but they also, they can do it to their own house. So it's a right that applies to everybody.
Mm.
So, you know, what they're looking at is doing is a single and double story extensions, allowing you to go 4 meters instead of three on semis and terraced, and then 5 meters instead of four on detached houses.
I think it's about time. I just think, you know, people need more space in this country, and people can't move. So let them have some space.
And then also allowing wraparound extensions and the PD.
I'm quite excited about these.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's very cool.
That's really cool.
And then allowing and removing the 50% curtilage so that you're not restricted how far you go back.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Yeah. And then also removing the limits for loft extension, so you can do a loft extension unlimited.
Yeah, that's cool.
And with the curtilage thing, have they replaced the 50% with a different number, or is it just whatever you want to do?
The proposal is just to remove it entirely. You've obviously still got the length that you can go and what you can do within your grounds.
Yeah.
But it means if you've got a smaller curtilage, or Yeah, you've got a smaller curtilage and you want to make your house bigger. You don't need a back, you don't deem you need a back garden. You can build over your back garden, whereby you might not have been able to before.
Okay, that's interesting.
But yeah, the one which is most exciting for us HMO landlords is the loft one, because there are a lot of properties whereby it's difficult to get space in the loft because
You're
you're
limited.
limited. Just think about, you know, that one we did in Portsmouth, Nile, whereby we had spent a fort well we would do it did it with a client, and the client spent a lot more on the loft than was foreseen because it had to stay within the permitted development allowance. If that wasn't there, you would have just built out the most, you know, the most structurally easy built, you know, space, and got more space up in the loft. But the final really exciting one is that if
I feel like we
you're,
need a drum roll. It's like
I
this
know,
is huge.
if your ridge is not high enough to allow for a room up there, they're suggesting you could raise it by a whole foot.
Really? Well, my ridge is always high enough. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, but just think about this. There are streets, there are towns where the housing stock is, you know, a foot too small. I think it's going to open up tens of thousands of properties that never worked before,
But would
that are
that,
now going to be possible to get 1 to 2 bedrooms up in the loft.
yeah, you're right,
that's the
absolutely.
one that actually surprised at, because then the levels of the properties on the street will all be different.
Which is no different to what they are now, if you look at certain streets.
But in certain streets, yeah, but that was the whole point, is that they were trying to keep them uniform as much as possible. That's why the dormers are at the back and not at the front, and
They
not,
want that building right, don't they?
yeah, that's why the dormer couldn't go above the ridge line and all of that stuff, so it would be more uniform.
It depends which angle you look at it. If you're walking down the street, you probably won't notice it, because what I'm predicting will happen is that they'll allow you to basically just con you won't be able to change the angle of the roof, so it stays in line. You'll just continue it up till it hits a foot, and then you can bring it back down. And there are already examples of that. Especially, you'll think about terraced houses on a hill. Everything is stepping down. So
Good point.
you might have, and also a foot up, as you look at it from the side on a plan, a foot up is like this. As you're looking at it from down here at the front of the property, you can't see up there. Even at the other end of the road, you can't necessarily see up there. And a foot in real reality won't look like a foot from the ground. So it's actually quite smart. And then you'll get your foot, and then unlimited PD rights to extend it out the back with your dormers as usual. And you know what, when we first did box dormers out the back of properties, they look weird, right? Now we're used to them. And this might look a little bit weird in certain contexts.
Fair. I guess some dormers still do look weird if they're not done well. So if it's all about how well they're done, and I guess the same will apply to any of these changes, right?
Exactly. And if they're
They've got,
not
I feel
done
like
well, then there's an argument they've not been done within PD.
that's right. But also, there just needs to be more flexibility. There just has to be. Otherwise, we're going to have no housing. You know, that's fit for purpose to house as many people as we've got, and give families and people and developers, you know, options. If they can't afford to move. So, yeah.
So
Yeah, no.
it is very quite exciting, some of these changes, I think, and it would be a shame if some of them didn't happen in terms of the positive ones. But yeah, where it feels like they're taking away, and if and then actually just wrote an article in YPN about this, about if yeah, is the government, you know, doing this on purpose, or are they accidentally realizing they're actually helping us at the same time as hindering us?
I think so. A longer term strategy of the government is to create more taxpayers, right? And by it creating the opportunity for people to have larger family homes, which is the majority, the population will increase. And because at the moment, people aren't having, I mean, our reproduction rates are right down at the moment. And part of that is related to space. People don't feel that they can afford to move. They don't feel that they can have extend their family, and therefore all those future taxpayers are going out the window. So this is very much part of the government's long-term plan.
Yeah, that makes sense, and that's the same regardless of which government's in power.
It's irrelevant, you know. It's not a political colour issue. It's literally a strategic issue, because people are not having children. They're choosing not to have children now. People are having fewer children, and yeah, all that future revenue that's assured is going out the window. So I think it massively links into that.
Yeah, because you've got the aging population and fewer. Yeah. Fewer people coming in. It's a ticking time bomb in many ways.
It is, you know, and that's a risk to the longevity of your economy. So, you know, this will that marginal shift to create more space and give people, you know, freedom to do that without going through planning will allow more people to breed. You know.
Yeah, we also have a net migration. So we do have people coming to the country. And what will happen is, if we don't breed in the country, then more people will move to the country to pay taxes. They'll allow more visas, more types of visas to all come in. Not that's a good or a bad thing, it's just a statement.
It changes, but it just changes the demographic, that's all.
It does.
Yeah, but it's definitely something that I've been listening to a lot of podcasts recently about our dwindling population. And this isn't just a UK thing, this is globally. People are having less children. So, which is ironic, given my son is just bouncing and blowing raspberries on my lap. But yeah.
Well, I guess that's not necessarily a bad thing that populations are getting smaller, because
it is a bad thing.
But we're overpopulated as it is. The world is overpopulated. We can't feed ourselves. You know, from an environmental point of view, we're finding it difficult to produce enough food to feed everyone that's on the planet, which is having an impact on the health of the planet.
I think actually, and Joe, if you've been listening to the podcast on that, I'm not entirely sure Niall's statement is factually accurate. We're getting into debate territory here.
Dangerously informative.
Yeah, no, but you're right in the fact that there is not parity in people's ability to eat, but there is enough to go around if it was spread properly.
But what I was talking about more along the lines of. Like, for example, rainforests and natural habitats being cut down or removed to leave way for agricultural livestock or growing crops, which is having a negative impact.
No, I'd agree with that. And I think actually that's more a lifestyle choice. You know, that's if we moved away from eating meat, then that would happen less and less. That's a supply and demand thing. It's because most of the world wants to eat beef.
But it's also a food industry thing. So, you know, everybody knows.
Oh, we're getting to conspiracy theory.
Oh, I know, but it's like the food industry and ultra processed food and all that kind of stuff is at the crux of so much, bad farming.
Mm.
So, it's one of those, isn't it? Because honestly, we could probably triple our global population and have them all feeding off ultra processed foods and be all right still. But it just means that everyone would probably die.
Yeah, there's
you wouldn't live as long. We'd get rid of the problem of the aging population.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's genocide through ultra processed foods.
I think there's definitely stats that say that the dwindling population is actually a massive future problem.
It is. So the US in particular. So it's really interesting. It was something I wasn't actually aware of until I started, thinking more about just children, having had my own and thinking, actually.
What is this future planet going to be like for our kids?
Yes, exactly. And Ellis doesn't really care right now. He's just blowing bubbles and doing poos, really, aren't you?
Forever blowing bubbles. Well, on that note, let's bring it back to property. Actually, no, let's wrap up. I think in summary, lots of changes. Watch this space and see what's going to happen. Keep an eye on announcements from from the government about how these are going to be implemented. And yeah, we'll always touch on it on future episodes. So for now, that's a goodbye from me. Hello.
I had to put myself on mute because Ellis was being so loud. It's a goodbye from me. Is it a goodbye from you? Yes.
I thought it'd be a goodbye from me too then.
Come and jam with us on social media where you can hear more and see more. On Facebook, search Property Jam Podcast.
Or you can follow us on Instagram at Property Jam Podcast.
Or you can email us at propertyjampodcast@outlook.com.
See you on the next episode.